Welcome to the New Health Club podcast. The New Health Club podcast is where the conversation around the new age of mental wellness begins. I think that psychedelics will play a big part in this, since we are talking about a new lifestyle here. So what are LSD, magic mushrooms, psilocybin, MDMA or ketamine are exactly doing for our mental health and personal progress? On the New Health Club podcast, I talk to patients who have experienced a psychedelic treatment. I talk to innovators, thought leaders, and disruptors from the emerging new world of psychedelics and mental wellness. Please enjoy the podcast. This podcast deals with drugs. Drugs are dangerous. Furthermore, the use and or trade of drugs can be punishable by law. Please keep this in mind. This podcast is not suitable for people under the age of 18. Hello and welcome to a new episode of the New Health Club podcast. Today I talk to Zach Hagney, the founder of The Trip Report, a newsletter on the business, policy and impact of psychedelics. The Trip Report monitors the business, policy, regulation, science and cultural impact of psychedelics and aims to be the go-to media outlet for all psychedelic stakeholders, including psychedelic advocates, enthusiasts, entrepreneurs, investors, policymakers, researchers, clinicians, or maybe just fans of the current psychedelic development. Zach, not unlike me, started to be involved in this very young industry just a while ago. And I like the way he's reporting and reflecting in his newsletter on all that is happening now so fast in the current psychedelic ecosystem. We talk about if psychedelics can be political, can they be left or right, and why veterans in the US play an important part in the research progress for psychedelics at the moment. And of course, we talk a good newsletter and how Zach is coming up with this newsletter. And we talk about Zach and my favorite fantasy project in the future, a psychedelic morning show. So enjoy the podcast and listen to Zach. So we are here on the New Health Club podcast with Zach. And you say your last name again?
Hagney.
Okay. I try to pronounce it. I mean, I always pronounce like last names wrong. That's why I write. It's better
with
people.
No, it's a challenging one, and you're forgiven.
So, so you have this amazing newsletter called The Trip Report, and as far as I remember, it's just you started it pretty recent, right? Like maybe you just tell us about the beginning and how, why and how this all came together.
Sure. Well, thank you. I had the initial idea about a year ago. I've been really interested in sort of the field of psychedelic science and watching it over the last few years, sort of MAPS and Compass and the various research at academic, you know, universities and such. I thought it was really fascinating, and I saw this sort of groundswell coming. So I decided to start writing about sort of my understanding of the science and the landscape, and as a means to, you know, just as a kind of fun side project. I've always sort of I've tried to become a writer a few times and have sort of like paused it for various reasons, but I thought I had an interesting sort of lens on the on this space, just given my sort of professional background, which I've sort of dabbled in. Background in clinical research and a small stint in Silicon Valley tech, and then most recently as an acupuncturist and alternative medicine provider. So I just saw this sort of nexus of things that were really interesting to me, and I started writing about it, and people seemed to enjoy it.
So basically, what you're doing is like. I mean, first of all, you don't only collect or combine information about the new, let's say, psychedelic business world or science world. You kind of also interpret it, you could say, a little bit, right? I mean, because I find it's a very specific way of presenting, information about this obviously very fast expanding business world also around psychedelics. So would your aim be like the Forbes of psychedelics?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out like what it is. I think Ramirez will sort of have a, you know, an understanding when I said, you know, they never know what they're going to get. Sometimes it's more long form sort of, you know, pieces on sort of a topic. And sometimes it's a curation of headlines with some, you know, some insight or commentary or analysis of it. It's essentially just me sort of thinking out loud about, you know, learning about this sort of new and nascent space and the companies that are forming, the organizations that are forming, the tensions that are within the psychedelic community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really, like, it's, you know, in academics, sort of like there's this idea of different disciplines sort of exist in silos, right? So you have economics over here, and you have the humanities over here, and the English department over here, and the chemistry department over here, and none of them talk to each other. And this is like everything is coming together in this. You can't separate, you know, consciousness research from the healthcare system, from venture capital, from medicinal chemistry, from mm-hmm. philosophy, from spirituality to indigenous, you know, religion and culture. So it's really, you know, this like nexus of, you know, really interesting topics in their own right coming together, you know, out of this like, you know, hibernation of prohibition and the war on drugs and dismissal of these molecules for, you know, for however somebody wants to engage with them. Medicinally, healing, recreationally, or for fun, you know, for spiritual exploration. So there's a lot to sort of like think about, and I enjoy sort of thinking out loud about it, I guess.
And I mean, how would you describe this, let's say, new psychedelic business world? Because obviously, in the last couple of weeks, we've seen a lot of new investments and suddenly like really big names are in the game. And already there was this one article today, I think, in Medium saying like, which always is the next thing that somebody says, will Silicon Valley ruin so-and-so and so? Basically, yeah. Silicon Valley ruins whatever is out there at one point. That's what, I mean, you can find that very often in media, that kind of thinking, sure. Which is sometimes a little stupid, I feel. Yeah. Because it's also like a classic media thinking. The moment it's becoming big, it's going to be ruined. So, right. I mean, how would you describe the your perception of that specific business that we just kind of see growing in front of us?
Well, I just wrote about this today, actually. You know, there's a frenzy of activity sort of centered in Canada, mm-hmm. right now, it seems like a lot of sort of businesses forming or previous businesses transitioning to a focus on psychedelics, and I've not really covered them because I should back up and say I guess that there's two different types of businesses forming, right? Like as a general heuristic, right? Yeah, and I kind of talk. One is like the short-lived bad trip, and one is a longer, growth-oriented sort of experience, right? And so there's businesses forming that strike me as just obviously opportunistic and you know what might be called as a pump and dump sort of operations with no true business model, just capitalizing on the excitement of psychedelics. And mm-hmm. then you have another sort of group, right, that were taking a long view of thinking about clinical trials, thinking about the legalization or decriminalization or these kinds of things. And those are the things, you know, MAPS Public Benefit Corp is sort of yeah. like the sort of I think of MAPS as like the soil that's kind of growing everything and sort of giving us the really the inspiration to sort of kind of pursue this. Compass Pathways is another one. USONA is a nonprofit, but they're also, you know, they've been in the game mm-hmm. for a long time, and they're developing psilocybin for major depressive disorder. So you have these two sort of flavors of businesses that are that seem to be sort of direct either providers or developing psychedelic compounds or medicines. And then you have sort of ancillary sort of opportunities of whether it's a lab or manufacturers or clinics who are popping up, therapist training programs. I mean, it's really like a full-on ecosystem. And in any ecosystem, there's going to be large sort of animals and small animals and symbiotes and parasites. And so, that's a pretty long-winded way of saying it's, there's a lot going on.
Yeah. And I mean, some people already tried to figure out how to some people came from cannabis investing and now are looking into psychedelic investing. So do you think that's already like a thing? I mean, in America, it obviously is already, but I mean, you can see that there in the coming people that have come up on LinkedIn, for example, where you see that people used to be investors or like even VCs dealing with the cannabis world now rapidly changing towards the psychedelic world. Do you think that's something that you would recommend somebody if somebody would ask you, dude, should I invest in psilocybin now?
There's definitely a crossover, right, mm-hmm. from cannabis to psychedelics. And there's some like glaring, you know, similarities and the glaring sort of differences. And there's a concern within the psychedelic community that the entrance from, as a blanket statement, the entrance from cannabis into psychedelics are sort of viewed with caution, right? Or mm-hmm. The nature of and the cannabis sort of like industry, so to speak, I'm not nearly as familiar with that as I am with sort of what's going on in psychedelics, but they're very different sort of tools, right? Like just mm-hmm. they're Schedule I drugs. They've been outlawed. They've been subject to prohibition. They've been excluded from medical research. Marijuana more than psychedelics. So there are some parallels there, but just in terms of the cultural place that they're at, and then the manner in which people use them, I think are really different. And so marijuana and cannabis has largely been a consumer sort of product, right? The going through cultivation, extraction, processing, retail to the end user. And that's kind of gone by state in Canada. It sort of was like on rolled out across the country at a certain point. Psychedelics are a little bit different because of how they sort of influence our consciousness and the altered state of consciousness from psychedelics is a very different beast than marijuana, right? The utility of it, I would argue, is greater for medicinal purposes, for healthcare reasons, than what we know about marijuana. I also think the potential, I don't like the phrase, drugs of abuse necessarily, because I think that sort of is mm-hmm. it kind of paints the wrong picture, and it's a throwback to sort of this prohibitionist sort of stance, but there's a difference between sort of a plant medicine that can inspire, growth and sort of change of perspective and consciousness and that kind of thing. And marijuana certainly can fit into that role. I think it also has a higher likelihood of what we might call abuse, right? I know that's a controversial statement within sort of the community, but So they're different, for sure. But there's a lot. There seems to be a lot of people that are pouring in from cannabis. How many or what percentage? I have no idea. There still seems. I mean, cannabis is still a huge, you know, compared to psychedelics, a much bigger industry, so to speak.
Yeah, but I mean, it seems interesting that even people start to write this in their profiles, like coming from the cannabis world, venturing towards psychedelics. So it just like in the last couple of months, I felt that it had increased a little bit. But I mean, how did you get into all of this? How did you get in touch with psychedelics? When did you hear about it first time?
Well, you know, high school and college, I had my sort of, you know, sort of the class, standard, you know, experimenting with mushrooms and LSD and that kind of thing. Less so in the last few years, although I'd say what brought me back into sort of an interest or like professionally was, you know, I mentioned that my day job and my training most recently has been in acupuncture, right? Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time working with people in chronic pain, occasionally depression, occasionally sort of other issues, but mostly musculoskeletal pain. And my study of pain leads to the study of the nervous system, leads to the study of the brain, and things like, you know, there's a high sort of incidence of comorbidities with chronic pain, depression, PTSD, early lifehood or early life traumatic events or stress events. So like there's no, they like to, it's almost like all these things are different kind of parts of the elephant, so to speak. You know, mm-hmm. there's overlap, right? So it brought me into that line of work brought me in touch with like trauma research, trauma-informed therapy. Acupuncture is one of a tool that's really used to help people get back in touch with their body. Is sort of like the saying goes. So it's used widely in the Veterans Association here in America. So anyway, I just saw this research of, you know, that Roland Griffiths was doing, Robin Carhart-Harris, that MAPS had been sponsoring for the last few years, that USONA was doing. And I just was like, at a certain point over the last few years, I realized like I got on the wrong train. I wish I was sort of doing research in psychedelics or in that, you know, in this domain. But I also recognize like I'm not going to be a therapist. Like I have too much respect for that process. And I knew that my skill set was not in that. So I needed another way to sort of transition into this space. I guess you could say, but in undergrad, I studied, you know, theology, philosophy, and biology. You know, I've always had a bent towards Eastern types of philosophy and thinking. So it felt like a natural sort of next step in sort of the things that I've been interested in and learning about.
I mean, what do you think is the most important thing right now to communicate about psychedelics? Because obviously, like, there's already these kind of, I'm not going to say camps, but some people say, well, it should be only communicated very scientifically and always relating to studies and scientific organizations and almost like just in a very medical language. And then, of course, at the same time, you feel that how many people, I mean, especially now, I would say, are actually looking out for anything that could actually help them to get, I mean, that not only to get over these times right now, but just also to give them another tool, because obviously other tools were not working anymore. So, and that means most people, or I would say there are a lot of people from the so-called mainstream that would be actually like to be addressed also if it comes to that kind of new medicine. So what is your where do you start to talk about this? I mean, is it humor? Is it kind of cultural context? Yeah, maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
You know, that's a good question. And I like the readership that I have and sort of the people who I write for, like, are, they're in this space. I kind of consider the Trip Report readers as being part of, like, the ecosystem, part of the builders of this ecosystem. So they have an understanding of it. So I don't spend a lot of time writing for the general public. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this is a tension within, you know, drug development, right? On the one hand, it's a tension that, right? So the early research is promising and there's people who need it now, but we need to sort of make sure it's safe, make sure it's effective, make sure we understand how it works. And that requires time and research and money and energy. So there's that inherent tension. There's an old guard of sort of psychedelic enthusiasts, scientists, researchers, not necessarily evangelists, but there's a community. There's a long-standing community that of people who have been using these tools for a long time, for cultural reasons, for personal mind expansion, mind exploration, spiritual exploration, therapeutic. There's the scientific sort of domain. This is like a long way of saying, like, I don't know. I don't know. It's like one of the, but it is like this kernel of a, you know, it's this sort of nexus or this area where that I think is like interesting and fascinating to explore. You know, something like, you know, 60 Minutes covering, mm-hmm. you know, the psilocybin research, you know, featuring Johns Hopkins. Every time a Forbes or a Fortune does a long piece, every time Michael Pollan sort of did, obviously, you know, was probably like the biggest influence on certain parts of the culture. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be more stuff like that. And, you know, the way I think about it is, like, there's all these different, you know, you could say exercise. Like, when we talk about exercise, right, exercise could mean running, you know, for a long period of time, like distance running, endurance. Exercise could also mean CrossFit, could mean yoga, could mean Pilates, right? So there's these different ways that people, and they draw people in based on the type of exercise that they need and what connects and what resonates. And I think it's a little bit like that, right? Like, some people are going to connect with the spirituality aspect. Some people are going to connect with the philosophical aspect. Some people are going to recognize, you know, their own sort of emotional pain and see this as a potential solution to that or part of the solution to that. But we're in a weird time right now because there's a lot of exuberance that I think is going to be short-lived with, like I mentioned, like these Canadian companies that are it's like a feeding frenzy right now. But then the longer-term, you know, businesses are going to still be doing research by the time all the Canadian companies fail. You know what I mean? Mm. So there is a time frame. This is going to be a drawn out thing, and I think, you know, the excitement about it is going to be challenging for people who, especially people who are, you know, suffering, for whom this could be a solution or part of a solution.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm wondering always, like, you already mentioned Michael Pollan as obviously the influencer number one with the whole thing. For the whole new psychedelic use, you could say. And I mean, I always try to observe, or I find interesting how certain entertainment laws are also working if it comes to psychedelics. Because next week, on May 11th, we'll have this movie on Netflix called Have a Good Trip. And you've seen it already probably in the U.S., media, and the person who's going to be quoted the most already is Sting, the singer of Police, for those who don't remember who that is. But it's going to be obviously very interesting that he talks very openly about LSD and psilocybin and psychedelics. And in a way, I'm wondering, and it's going to be an interesting experiment next week once the movie is out, if so-called, well, celebrities or influencers, if they talk about that in the way that he is obviously talking about it in the movies thing, if that will have an impact, maybe even on, I don't know, political developments or political partner, not even parties, but maybe decision makers who actually realize faster the potential of this. Or if it's for some people, I mean, some people say it, the opposite is happening, but honestly, I don't really think so. I think the more, my impression is the more people who are very established and very kind of, yeah, confirmed that they are successful and reliable and rich and whatnot. If they are actually saying, well, this is probably a really good thing to research, then this has more like a positive impact, I feel.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I think, I mean, from a political perspective, at least in America, you know, politicians are beholden to their constituents. And so if you know, it's like we don't, you know, gay marriage in America is no longer a, you know, it's just like everyone agrees upon it. Like, it should be the way. I mean, there's fringe, obviously, that are still holding out, but it's no longer an issue in a presidential election, let's say. Mm-hmm. And so I think marijuana is kind of going through that. There's some change that the NFL just, I'm not sure if they're no longer testing for it. But the, you know, chipping away at it from a cultural perspective, I think is what, you know, this sort of bottom up type of sea change rather than a, you know, a top down sort of legislative or Supreme Court decision, is how these things, you know, move, you know, how history changes. So I think that the, something like Sting and, you know, celebrities who are going to be in that. I know there's Sarah Silverman.
Yeah. Ben Stiller,
yeah, Adam Scott, a few other people. That is, I mean, you know, that's going to be helpful for sure. It's going to get more people interested in it. It's going to, I'd be interested in seeing what, you know, whether or not that's like a recreational sort of type of thing, if it was a spiritual, if it was for the purposes of addressing, you know, depression or trauma or something like that. So that'll be interesting to see. I think a big lever for public opinion is going to be how the veterans respond to it. Mm-hmm. Right. So in America, we've got this long, long drawn out war in the Middle East. There's the number of 22 former military personnel are killing themselves every day. That's like the number that's sort of like conventionally thrown around. I don't know how accurate that one is, but it's a big problem, and mm-hmm. it's ravaging, you know, this part of our society for whom, you know, they fought for the country, right? So there's bipartisan support for the vets, mm-hmm. and if this. And I know that MAPS is working on it. There's a guy named John, I think his name's John Lubecki, mm-hmm. who works for MAPS and is like the liaison between the military, the VA, and MAPS, and is trying to help form these relationships. That will be a big that will be huge if and when that happens. The VA is super bureaucratic, takes forever to like get anything done there from what I understand, but it would also, it could theoretically save them a ton of money. It would be super helpful for, you know, people who are suffering. And it would reinforce a positive, connotation, rather than, you know, the prohibitionist and the war on drugs sort of way of viewing, psychedelics.
Well, I mean, I certainly remember driving around in LA, and then when you stop at a traffic light, there were very often older gentlemen holding a sign like veteran, can't make a dollar or something. So, yeah. But they were obviously still suffering from Vietnam. Although it's like so long ago, but still, I mean, I, that concept was pretty unfamiliar to me for a long time until I saw them standing at the traffic light. So mm-hmm. do you think that psychedelics at one point could be part of a political campaign? Because we've seen that Andrew Yang had mentioned last year, I think it was, that he would be actually interested, like, outspoken for decriminalizing psilocybin, at least.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, Andrew Yang was like a breath of fresh air, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of like kind of conventional political discourse. And so, I mean, I hope that both like both the left and the right, you know, in America can kind of come up with new ideas, because I think as they do, as somebody like Andrew Yang, who sort of fomented as much excitement and enthusiasm as he did for someone being so out of left field, out of the blue, new ideas sort of get introduced. You know, he did the most for universal basic income, which is a sort of an old bipartisan idea, right? It was both Milton Friedman and Martin Luther King were proponents of universal basic income. So it's definitely this, it has potential for bipartisan support and for, you know, being a, if it's, you know, it'd be interesting to see how marijuana sort of affects somebody like Joe Biden. And then he's the, because his, I felt like his, you know, his understanding of the quote unquote, the Overton window of where marijuana is in the culture was leaves a lot to be desired. And his past history, like the Rave Act, is like an atrocious sort of thing that's been been really problematic. So it feels like it's welling up through, you know, blogs and podcasts like you and I are doing, and it's kind of the Fortune and Time and 60 Minutes and larger sort of entities, and what's interesting, what's great about it is it's like it's based on science, right? Like Rick Gottman has a mantra of like, you know, the system has ways in which you can change the system, and the way that we do that is with science in this day and age. So it's really exciting and you know, and fascinating to sort of have to be watching.
Well, just coming back a little bit, what you said about what we talked about in the political context, I feel in Europe, anything that's related to any kind of drugs or tools or experiments has always rather taken place in a, let's say, left-wing context. And it's rather unlikely that, let's say, a rather conservative or even right-wing party person, a political person, would actually agree on this or be interested in this. So do you think in America this is different? Because I feel that even very, let's say, classic business people now start to see the benefits, and also, like we talked about it earlier, the really big industry behind psychedelics could actually create at one point. So the question would be, can psychedelics be political, would be actually the question.
Can they be political?
I mean, in a way, can it be left-wing or right-wing? Is that even possible?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if it were to come up in this upcoming election, you know, here in America, I think my head would explode regardless of what Trump has to say about it. You know, I couldn't even imagine what he would how he would sort of wrap that. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would be a left versus right thing. And I say that because kind of going back to the way that this could enter the healthcare system is by addressing this bipartisan sort of issue, which is like sort of really deep and, you know, emotional pain, like that doesn't know a party alliance, right? And so,
yeah.
And that manifests in different ways of alcoholism or opiate abuse or issues of some sort of self-harm or self-sabotaging behavior, trauma, depression. Like these are, you know, they're issues of that don't know a party line. And so, and that's why I think like if the Veteran Administration can start to use these, if it would be great if like MAPS expanded access program sort of was in the VA in some capacity, that would be really awesome. So I don't know. I don't think it would be a left-right division. I can never sort of keep track of what the left-right divisions are anymore anyway. Like, it seems like things are changing so, you know,
yeah,
drastically.
True.
So, yeah, I mean, I think they're because we're coming at it from like a science sort of first approach, sort of, or science and other sort of approaches first, that and the conditions that we're talking about are across the board. Yeah, I would hope not. That would be.
Well, I mean, I think if science is involved, the chances are bigger that something is kind of apolitical in a way. And at least the chances are bigger than if it's, let's say, only communicated through a very spiritual or only...
Oh, totally.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you can't just...
Yeah.
I mean, if studies have a certain outcome, you can hardly say anything against it in
totally.
A way.
Yeah, and I think it's like, yeah, I agree. Part of the perspective that I have is like acupuncture is a really poorly understood modality, I would argue, both within the profession and from a cultural perspective. And the science to sort of study it is really challenging to do, and it faces some of the similar challenges that psychedelics face, in that it's like really tough to blind patients. So to get a randomized controlled trial. But because it has such an overt connotation with China, like ancient China and, you know, weird woo-woo crystally kind of stuff, it definitely has held back the you know, the profession in many regards, I would argue. I don't think psychedelics has that, because the movement has really sort of been like the architecture of this feels very intentionally created by the people at MAPS, right? Like they have this vision of how to make cultural change, and you start with like the very basic science. So they've funded like so many studies. We're focused right now on the phase 3 MDMA trial, but they have got a ton of, you know, basic research that they've funded over the last 34 years. And they have a charismatic and we've got a mensch, you know, the term the mensch is like such a great term to describe Rick Doblin.
Isn't Yiddish always like a really good Yiddish? It's, I feel, is always like the perfect language for so many things.
Oh, God, so good.
It's, it's so good.
But anyway, so I think this, yeah, I mean, it feels like the momentum is you know, the wind is in the sails, and it's like it's on course in the right way because of you know, the work that MAPS has done.
And do you think that America will need psychedelics even more after the COVID crisis than before, or the world? But I mean, you live in America, you can talk about America.
I mean, yeah, we're gonna need, you know, mental, emotional help and spiritual help, but that's always been the case, I think. I mean, this is like it's turning up the volume on an issue that I feel has been growing for, you know, a long time, namely of sort of disconnection and emotional pain and isolation. And so this sort of feels like, you know, kind of like 10x what has already been happening. I mean, in a weird way.
So the answer is yes, it needs it more than ever before. not only America, but I mean, it seems that.
Yeah. Well, part of the promise of psychedelics is like this sort of reshaping of what these conditions are, like what we call. I mean, every time we have a school shooting in America, like the term mental health is used, and mm-hmm. I mean, maybe this I'm sort of talking out of my league here, but it feels like we're uncomfortable talking about emotional health. Mm-hmm. We behavioral health is fine to use. We can use mental health. We can use, you know, addiction. But like the core, like people don't like to make themselves vulnerable and talk about their emotional, pain. And that feels like, you know, if we can sort of recalibrate the fields that deal with this domain to put sort of what might be called like emotional resilience and emotional intelligence or emotional literacy, that feels like the promise of psychedelics, right? Because it the psychedelic experience it like diminishes sort of the cognitive, you know, it inhibits the default mode network, which is where we ruminate and we cogitate and we sort of think and we're stuck in our head, and the opportunity to check in sort of in a different way with what's going on with our, you know, physiology feels like an important shift that we need to make.
So, I mean, maybe this is the real revolution that comes out of this whole COVID crisis, and also at the same time, the emergence of psychedelics, that this whole idea of not talking about mental health or just being embarrassed about it, it doesn't work for nobody anymore, because everybody is mentally affected in one way or the other. So nobody could say, no, I'm fine. Like, my neighbors are really bad, but I'm super cool. Nothing has happened to me in the last 3 weeks. It's actually no longer possible. So it's like a total equalizer of mental health that just happens, I feel. So we totally got left the topic of doing a fantastic newsletter like you are doing. So just tell me a little bit, and I think that's interesting for a lot of people, what is the, let's say, the secret sauce of a good newsletter these days?
Oh, gosh.
you do it. I mean, you have to know it.
Well, you know, I think, it's not for everybody, right? So I try to, you know, it can be, there's occasional cursing and
Hunter S. Thompson pictures.
Yeah. So, you know, it's I suppose like from a newsletter perspective, right? Like the you know, you write for one person, and really like it sounds, I don't know if it sounds corny or self-indulgent, but I'm writing for myself. Like I like to create, and if I feel like I'm making people laugh or have insight or think differently about something, that's what I'm trying to do. And so that, you know, it's, that's my aim with this. And, my aim is to, you know, sort of offer, I want to be helpful to the community. I don't, like, on the one hand, I'm not trying to create puff pieces that were, you know, just flattering companies or people in the space. And on the other hand, I'm not looking to write hit pieces where I'm just taking people or companies down for, I'm trying to straddle like a middle ground where, it's useful, it's valuable, it's insightful, it's fun. People look forward to it. And part of what that means for me is like, okay, if I think something is clever or funny or insightful, that's what I spend time trying to like get to. Mm-hmm. And it does, and sometimes it works better than others. Sometimes you stay up really late and it just doesn't work. But
so when do you think we have your media empire? In how much time do you think? Like 5 years?
Well, the model that I'm using the Trip Report is a newsletter. It goes out by email 3 times a week. Two of them are for supporters and paying subscribers. And then one of them is for the full, you know, for the full list. And that's a slower, you know, build than a, you know, other forms of media. So, it takes a lot of trust and I think a lot of, trying it out, testing it on before people are willing to pay for something like that. But that's what I'm hoping to, I would love to stick with this model if I can for, you know, for the next 50 years.
That well, it's possible. For the next 50 years, well, I'm sure there will be some other things happening in between.
Yeah, sure. So,
that some people will actually, I don't know, buy it and I don't know, but I mean, it's definitely not going to stay just a newsletter, that's for sure.
We'll see. If you know something that I don't, Anne, you better let me know.
We figured it out in the coming years of your successful career.
I really like the medium. I like writing. I like, having a direct relationship with my readers. That's important to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a boss. So, and that's the best.
That's the best. Yeah. But
do you, are my boss.
But do you have like people writing to you, hey, Zach, this week I was kind of so happy about this, or I was disappointed. Do you have like a conversation with people all the time?
Say that again?
I mean, is it like, do actually your, let's say, customers or subscribers, do they interact with you? Do they write to you saying like, Zach, this week you made my week. It was so funny. I was laughing myself kind of.
Oh, hands down, the best part about this whole has been like meeting new people and, you know, connecting with people who are in the space doing cool stuff and sharing ideas. Like that is like without a doubt, like the greatest reward here. Mm-hmm. So I've had people say like, dude, this is garbage. And I've had people say like, this is great. So you take the good with the bad and, for the most part, it's been really positive, which, you know, as the readership grows, I feel like the weight, like I feel the responsibility of being thoughtful and delivering quality. So, that's stressful, but, it's a good stress.
Okay. So, I mean, we talked about our coming project, the psychedelic morning show at one point.
The coffee book table / morning show.
Exactly. I mean, that's my dream, to be honest. All right. That was a lot of fun. It was very interesting. We totally got to a different topic, which often happens with people who are actually doing interesting things. And then you want to know what they think about other things and not about their newsletter or their company. So, it was great to have you on the podcast. And I'm excited for the next newsletter that's coming into my inbox.
Definitely. Yeah, I appreciate you reading it and thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you.